Welcome back to the Deeper Dive Podcast. I am your host again, Associate Pastor Lanier Wood, Covenant Presbyterian Church. Welcome back. If you're new to us, we are taking a look at the book of Hebrews as our small groups work through the book of Hebrews together. And when you are studying Scripture, there are times where you wish you could just take it a little bit further in. You know, we open it up, we get our first look, but there's still a lot of things that we're wondering about, things that we're wrestling with. I hope this provides a little bit more context, a little bit more story, a little bit more theology of what's going on in the book of Hebrews. We haven't done much on the way, by way of context, but an important part of Hebrews is its context. We don't know its author. We've said that before, but we actually do know who Hebrews is written to. That Hebrews is written to new Jewish converts, to new believers. And if you're a Jewish convert, there are a couple things going on. One, you have the background of Judaism, the temple worship, the law, and all the things that are going on, which we're going to find Hebrews regularly putting Christ into the framework and context to help us understand that Christ was the point of the Jewish faith, or is the point. But also, you're under persecution, both by the Romans and by the Jews, both by the governing people around you who were dealing with the trials of the time and religious persecution, but also by the Jews who treated Christianity as an apostate religion, and oftentimes under the penalty of death. So this book is written to those people who have a new faith with lots of really basic questions and are building a very basic theology, but also need a faith that will sustain them in suffering. And Hebrews is written that way. And it's not surprising then that both to build a basic Christian theology and to provide comfort, that Hebrews' mission would be to tell us of the greatness and the uniqueness of Christ, that all Scripture points to Jesus, that all of the creation and God's work was to show us Christ, the Redeemer, who is the glory of God and the salvation of the world. But now Hebrews is going to take an interesting twist because it goes from the glory of Christ, we're entering into Hebrews chapter 2, verses 5 through the end of that chapter. We go from the glory of Christ, right, how He is better, greater than the angels, to the humiliation of Christ, to Christ emptying Himself, to Him becoming low, to the incarnation, and to the foolishness, at least in man's eyes, of God's taking on flesh. But here's my proposition, because, y'all, this is where we find that His glory is most unique. That is, His suffering is not distinct from those things, that God is doing something in that. You know, all great men in history, they find their glory in exaltation, but Christ's glory is equally in His exaltation and His humiliation. Listen to what Westminster Shorter Catechism teaches us. When it asks the question about what office does Christ execute as our Redeemer, it answers this: Christ as our Redeemer executes the office of a prophet, a priest, and a king. We're going to hear about those three things as we work through Hebrews. Those are the roles that Christ plays, the official, the titled roles that Christ plays, and the real things that He does in those roles. But it doesn't just say it. It says Christ as our Redeemer executes the office of a prophet, a priest, and a king, both in His estate of humiliation and exaltation. Verse 5 through 8, in our passage, go back to that exaltation. Jesus is again referenced and compared to the angels. It says, God subjected the angels to Him and the world to Him. I mean, Jesus is the glory of God. But you get to verse 8, right? And we're supposed to see and experience and know everything in subjection to Jesus. But Hebrews acknowledges this. Listen to what it said. Now, I'm putting everything in subject to him. He left nothing out of control. But at present, we don't see everything in subjection to him. The world is under his dominion. But that's not what we see every day, is it? What our experience is, and partly because we've wrestled against the dominion of Christ, as we see the brokenness, we see the world in rebellion, politically, personally, socially, economically, environmentally, the world isn't working as it should. And the futility of so much work as we try to work on these things seems to be this, that there's no solution. The world in these moments, and probably rightly, maybe wrongly in another way, always looks to the top, right, in the crisis, to the company or the country or whatever. The top is where you kind of decide where to make the cuts, where to figure things out, where to set the policy. But what's interesting to see, though, is that as we look to the next leader, and he becomes a promise of better things, if we take any study of history, we can see how temporary the hope in one person can be, how quickly chaos and distortion and control are lost. Because we experience the world in distortion and not in subjection. And every effort of the man or putting hope in men ends up looking like trying to crawl out of quicksand, right? And the more we struggle, the deeper we sink. And here's what Hebrews does in verse 8. There's this transition. Hebrews, instead of telling us of a leader who can get out of the quicksand, which Christ could, right? Christ could have come down off the cross. It tells us of the Christ who goes in, of the Christ who hangs on the cross. Do y'all remember that TV show, Undercover Boss? It might still be going on. Usually there's a CFO, CFO, CEO, the head of a company, right, comes in and he's going to take on the role of the average everyday worker, kind of be like the people, see what it's like, and you know, get to be on their ground level and hear from them. And what happens is not just, and it's pretty scripted. You kind of know it's going to happen, but not just to hear from people, but he realizes how hard the work is. He realizes the dignity of their work and not to take them for granted. He takes on their form, right? So that he can understand them. Well, what Jesus does is he takes on our form, right? He enters into our experience. But there's a really big difference. I mean, Undercover Boss is a marketing scheme, right? It's trying to gain back the trust. It's kind of proving something or showing how great a company is because of how humble the boss is. The reality of Christ is that from the very beginning, this was Jesus' plan. From the very beginning, Jesus' plan was to enter in, was to make himself lower than the angels, was to suffer. And here's the thing, is that he's not just suffering to identify with us, though it does create identity. He's not like William Wallace, who leads the charge either. You know, and in the death of William Wallace, there's this whole uprising of Scotland against the oppression of of England, and everybody follows him. No, Jesus does something different. Jesus doesn't just identify and then send us out. What Jesus does is he actually comes into our battle, takes our place, and accepts our defeat. And we get his victory. You see, Jesus' suffering, his subjection, it was tasting death, our death. And this is what's happening. This is why it's such a big deal. This is why this is more than just Jesus identifies with your suffering. It's actually Jesus suffered your suffering. When it says in verse 14, since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he likewise partook of the same things. that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death. Look at what it's saying. It's that he actually partook it. It's that he took death and conquered the grave. See, there's a bigger story of subjection. There is a bigger story of glory. Jesus' suffering is not secondary so that he could conquer over death. It is actually of first importance, just like the resurrection. Jesus dying our death should be of equal wonder to us as the resurrection, that God himself, though he is in the form of God, as Paul says in Philippians 2, did not count equality of God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking on the form of a servant, born in the likeness of man, humbles himself through obedience and love and service, even to the point of death, death on the cross, the death of our guilt. Jesus' suffering was our suffering. And that's what makes him the better high priest. That's what makes him a better man to stand in our place than the boss who just is our advocate, or the William Wallace who is our leader. That when he came, look what it says. We heard this in Romans from Alex's teaching, that he made propitiation for sins, that in his death and resurrection in our place, the cost, the weight, the burden of our sin was satisfied before God. And it concludes in verse 18, for because he himself has suffered when tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. And I want you to keep putting this into this framework, that it's not just saying Jesus can identify, or you just kind of have a good friend in your suffering or your temptation. It's actually saying that Jesus is with you in it, that you're not alone. You have that friend that you call on, maybe can or maybe can't show up. He's not like Jesus. He's not like God. When God sent Christ, his son, to take on flesh, Jesus was with his people. It's upending everything of the world's plan. The world's plan of subjection is when the king sits on the throne and conquers all those things, and Jesus is going to do that, but he does it not by getting out of the quicksand, but by going in. See, if Jesus just got out of the quicksand, guess where we'd be left? We'd be left there. We'd still be left with quicksand. Jesus comes in, and he rescues his people and sends us out, and he stands in our place. See, the way of Jesus, it's called subversive. It's not like the world. It's upside down. That the way of glory is actually the way of the cross. Come and wait and call on Jesus.